Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the December NJEDA Board Meeting. At this time, all phone participants are in a listen-only mode. Attendees on Microsoft Teams should remain muted until it's their turn to. If any of the public attending in person will be acknowledged to speak first, then by Teams, then by phone, you will be asked to provide your name and any organization with which you are affiliated. Members of the public attending via Microsoft Teams may use the raise hand feature to be placed into a queue to provide comment. Members of the public attending by phone will be advised to press star, then one on your telephone keypad to be provide comment. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing star, then two. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the numbers. If you require assistance during the call, please press star, then zero. I will now turn the conference over to Chairman Terry O'Toole. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator. I'd like to call the meeting to order. Can't believe this is the last time I'm going to say this, but Tim, could you read the Open Public Meeting Notice, please?
One last time. In accordance with the Open Public Meeting Act, notice this meeting has been sent to the Star-Ledger, the Bergen Record, and the Trentonian. At least 48 hours prior to this meeting, and a meeting notice has been posted on the Secretary of State's bulletin board at the Department of State.
Thank
Back
you,
to you, Mr. Chairman.
Perfect, as always.
Thank you.
I'm going to scoot now.
Yeah. I also can't believe I'm going to say this, but for the last time, Muneri, could you call the roll, please?
Sir. Chairman Terry O'Toole.
Present.
Macio Medina Ferrara.
Present.
Aisha Glover.
Present.
Jewel Antoine Johnson.
Present.
Robert Shimko.
Here.
Cameron Cruz from the Executive Branch.
Here from the Executive Branch.
Labor Commissioner Robert Angelo.
Here.
Manuel Polino for Banking Commissioner Justin Zimmerman.
Here.
Elizabeth Dragon for DEP Commissioner Sean LaTourette.
Here.
State Treasurer Elizabeth Moyo.
Here.
Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Muneri. I'm going to give some chairman remarks. First, welcome to the NJEDA December board meeting. Before we begin on this first day of Hanukkah, I just want us to take a moment and acknowledge the events of the weekend, both in Sydney and at Brown University, and just ask everybody to remember people in your prayers and pray for peace as we head into the holidays. Today, moving forward, the board will consider two items related to expanding workforce development initiatives across the state. The board will consider the approval of phase two of the New Jersey Green Workforce Training Grant Challenge. Building on the success of phase one, the $4 million grant program will position residents for green economy careers with a particular focus on serving the state's overburdened communities. Under phase two, applicants will be asked to propose plans to implement workforce reduction programs that provide industry-recognized credentials, connect participants with job opportunities in the green economy, and develop outreach that targets and supports a diverse and inclusive pool of participants. The board will also consider a $1.2 million grant to the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 825, under the Apprenticeship Training Center's Construction Grant Program. The award will provide funds to Local 825 to build a new training facility in Dayton, allowing the union to increase its apprentice capacity, provide comprehensive skill development to New Jerseyans, and ensure apprentices that are equipped to meet the demands of modern construction projects, bolstering workforce development opportunities in a crucial industry. Workforce development has become a key focus of the NJEDA under the Murphy administration. We remain committed to ensuring residents of every zip code that they have access to comprehensive training programs so they are prepared for high-quality job opportunities created by a growing economy. Now, we're going to do something a little different this morning, and first I'm going to turn it over to Kathleen Coviello for a presentation on our Strategic Innovation Center program, which is quite exciting.
Thank you, Chairman. Good morning, everyone. It's great to be with you all. Next slide, please. Thank you. So as this board has been extremely active in approving the platform for Strategic Innovation Centers, and given the tenure of where we are for our CEO and our governor, we thought it appropriate during this transition time to look back and look forward. So this board has come close to approving the 12 announced strategic innovation centers. There might be one or two on your agenda for January, but there's certainly one on the agenda today as well. We have worked with a group called ESI to help us do a pro forma analysis on what these centers mean. As you've heard through the last few years when we've been working with you all on these investments, we believe these are really paramount changing implications for the state in a very positive manner. And we really wanted to put the detail behind that to look at what that means for the impact. ESI used the implant model, which most of you are familiar with, that we use for the Aspire tax credit program, and they looked on an annual impact and on a pro forma 10-year impact for these centers. Our investments, as you might recall, are 5-year investments, and then we look for these centers to be self-sustaining after that. And they take many different forms, which I'll overview here for you, as well as the highlight of the findings. Each board member has in front of them a summary of the report, and the summary drills down to each of the 12 centers and what the impact for each of the centers shall look like for the state. Next slide, please. So here you might see, you should see names that look familiar to you all on these 12 centers. They fall into three distinct categories. Should I pause for a moment here?
Is it live? I think I'm going to interrupt Kathleen for
late breaking news.
A special guest is called into the board meeting. Special guest, are you there? Can you hear us?
Hi, I'm setting up the meeting. He'll be here shortly. Sorry. So sorry.
That's okay.
Beat, you have anything you want to say?
Let us know when the special guest arrives. We'll keep going.
Perfect. Yep, keep going. He will join in about 5 minutes. Yep.
And we're not saying who it is, by the way.
I thought it was me.
It might be Charlie Murphy.
Okay.
So these innovation centers have fallen primarily into three categories, as you'll see on the screen here. Information and high tech, life sciences, and advanced manufacturing, really playing to the unique assets of the state of New Jersey. Each center is a public-private partnership, as you all may recall. The EDA's investment is just that equity investment into, most cases, a new co that we've created for this purpose, along with our private sector partners. The centers run along the state, again, based on where the assets are that we can bring to life through these partnerships. Next slide, please.
Is just before you go, it is really interesting to see the geographic spread throughout the state.
Yeah. There was some intention at Matt.
Yes.
So you'll see in this analysis the impact for these 12 centers takes several different paths. One is the one-time impact that can't be forgotten. So there are capital investments across 5 of these centers where we're actually building facilities. Those 5 centers got $68.5 million of investment from the EDA. The total impact of the build-out alone is projected at $386 million from that $68.5 million. So again, that's the public-private leverage or multiplier that we're seeing for each of these centers. The one-time impacts for the physical space include lease revenue and long-term asset value. And as you might suspect, the largest concentration of the physical space is in the life science sector, where we've built out labs in particular. So 87% of the real estate is for life science centers. And then the analysis goes in to look at the annual impact of each of the SICs. Once operational, over 1,000 companies are expected to be on site. These are startup companies, obviously. And again, everything is about a public-private partnership to help elevate these companies. So in many cases, as you know, we've brought in accelerator partners to help us run these centers, one of which you'll hear about today. And then certainly there will be research, IP developed, clinical trials developed, and many more activities at each of these centers on an annual basis. The research and startups are projected to generate $385 million of direct impact and $730 million of total annual impact. So that includes earnings, jobs, taxes, and induced spend at each of these centers. So these are large numbers that we're talking about. And long-term economic growth, again, things like patents and clinical trials, 1,400 patents are expected to come out of these centers and 35 clinical trials. And the highlight of the report is shown for you in a summary form on the next page. Advance the slide, please. So across the 12 strategic innovation centers, EDA, through Governor Murphy's leadership and through the support of the legislature, received state appropriations, and $190 million of those appropriations have been invested in these strategic innovation centers. And what that means for new startup businesses in the state at year 10 is 28,000 direct jobs, 35,000 induced jobs. And what we know historically is when you start a business, create jobs in a specific location, those are very sticky jobs from an economic development standpoint and very hard to move those jobs. So through these investments, we're creating a lifeline of jobs in the state. There's $17 billion of total economic output triggered by the startups that will be in these centers. Again, $5.6 billion of that 17 is expected to come from the life science industry, $1.6 billion from advanced manufacturing, $1.7 billion from information and high-tech companies. And then ultimately, $427 million of earnings, that's annual tax revenue, generated from the startups that will take home in each of these SICs. And this includes jobs and direct earnings from those companies as well. So I think you'll agree, very significant impact from these investments. If we even capture just a small percentage of what's projected here over these 10 years, it will be a strong return for both the state and the EDA, given there is financial returns through investments and lease revenue, as I spoke about. So hopefully there's some sustainability in this model as well. So again, we worked with an outside group to prepare this. You have a summary of the report. There is hefty financial economic analysis and detailed papers that's behind all of this that we're happy to go through with any or all of you. But before you vote on today's Strategic Innovation Center, and again, given the timing and tenure of a change in administrations and all of the hard work under Tim Sullivan's leadership and Governor Murphy's leadership that went into putting these together, and certainly the support of the board, we wanted to share this report out with you.
You might just quickly mention the council.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Terry. So, you know, we know stringing these 12 innovation centers together is critical to their success. There's certainly synergies to happen with that. And so we have stood up a Strategic Innovation Center Advisory Council. We've held two meetings so far. One, the governor chaired for us. The second was virtual to share this report. It includes both the leaders of each of the 12 strategic innovation centers, as well as private industry folks that can help us advance this initiative. We expect to meet with them on a regular basis. They're not only ombudsmen in market sharing the news, the impacts, the opportunities here, but helping guide us on strategy and commonalities and opportunities for these innovation centers.
Any other state in the country have anything like this?
Other states have clusters, right? And certainly you look to Boston, you know, the life science cluster there, Florida, California, but we're not aware of one that has gone as broad and bespoke as these innovation centers.
Any questions? Anyone on the phone questions for Kathleen? Great, thanks.
Thank you.
I think we're now going to go, Kara's going to give a presentation on Netflix and Port Monmouth.
Morning, everybody. I actually don't have any slides, so you're just going to have to listen to me talk. I just wanted to come to the board, first of all, to thank the EDA for all of their support over the last few years. Essentially, FEMERA is a much smaller sister agency to the EDA, so we've, over the last 15 years, had to borrow HR, IT, and a lot of guidance and help from the EDA board and others. We haven't had as much scrutiny as we've had in the last few years since Netflix came along, but I'm happy to report that on December 5th, we closed with Netflix. which was an amazing transaction for the state of New Jersey, definitely would not have come to fruition without the support of the EDA. As a result of closing 2 years early on the contract, so they had 24 months still of runway on approvals, we essentially received $55 million in a purchase price. This allowed us to pay off our working capital loan. We had two of them with the EDA for approximately $19 million. So we are paid in full to the EDA, which is good for the EDA and also good for us. We've zeroed that out. We also had to relocate offices because we sold our building on the same day that we closed with Netflix. And the EDA team in real estate helped us to find a new location. So we have this amazing new location in Monmouth County now with EDA folks as well in the new Commvault building. They helped us to do that entire move. So kudos to the EDA team to also help us do that. And also the EDA finance folks that helped us to basically service the loans over the last 2 years. What the project's going to do essentially is over the next few years, they're going to remove 85 buildings of blight. They've already taken 30 down. It's going to be a capital investment of $848 million. There's 3,500 construction jobs that are anticipated on the site, and then about 1,500 regular jobs. In the first phase, about 1,400 with another 150 forecasted approximately in the second phase. There'll be 12 sound stages, which means at any given time there could be six movies or six series filmed, and it's lights out for the economic development. Do you need me to stop? Yeah, or?
I think we have our special guest.
Okay.
do we have a special guest caller, please?
Hey, Terry, can you hear me?
We can.
Hey.
Good morning, Governor.
Hey, good morning, everybody. I want to thank Terry for the point of personal privilege. He and I have only known each other 42 years, so we're still getting to know each other. But, Terry, thank you, buddy. To you and the board, I had wanted to be in Trenton today to do this in person, but it turned out it was not possible. But I wanted to give – by the way, Kara, what an incredible presentation, and it's hard to believe, given how devastating the closure of Fort Monmouth was for our part of the state. We live, you know, 12 to 15 minutes from it, that this was a big hole in the donut, 1,100 acres of just a soreness and the reminder, the notion that led by Netflix and with the great work by FEMERA and the EDA, and Kara, hats off to you, that this thing has been transformed and it's only up from here. But I didn't come on to give Kara a big shout out, although I'm a huge fan. I came on to give Tim Sullivan a shout out. You know, we just had the Heisman Trophy award granted on Saturday night in New York. And so I'm going to make two observations, one of which is probably pretty clear. The other one is one that I also have great passion about, and perhaps it may be of interest to you all. It may not be as clear. The first one is as it relates to economic development. For the 8 years that we've been in office, the absolute runaway freight train Heisman Trophy winner is Tim Sullivan. We have transformed this state, and Tim has led that at every single step of the way. And he's had great help. Obviously, a great board led by Terry and before that by Kevin. To each of you, thank you. To Mary, who will step in and do great work. To Kathleen, who in sickness and in health has been there at every step of the way, to the whole team. It's a great example of it takes a village. But there's one undisputed heavyweight champ Heisman Trophy winner. I don't mean just at the EDA. I mean across the entirety of government, and it's Tim Sullivan. I've been asked a lot. I'm doing a bunch of these legacy interviews. Tim and I sat together for an interview that turned into like seven articles. right? I mean, Tom Berger, I saw Tom over the weekend, and I said, Tom, I need another five articles from that interview. but people have asked me, you know, 10, 20 years from now, what's the one thing you all have done that when folks, the history books, look back and assess the long-term impact, not just the impact within our 8 years. I've landed on the strategic innovation centers of all the things we've done. everything from raising minimum wage to earned sick leave to making the full pension payment. I think the strategic innovation centers, and they're not the only example that will ignite the next generation of our innovation economy, but they are the best example. And we've done 12 of them, again, led by Tim and team, and they will have a huge lasting impact, particularly in the startup economy. You know, even through decades of mismanagement or undermanagement, by the way, by both sides of the aisle, guilty as charged, New Jersey largely held on to the big companies, but it really lost its way in the startup culture community, and that has been reignited. Clearly due to a lot of programs, but I'm going to point to the strategic innovation centers, each of which you could see throwing off, you know, several dozen startups a year, some of which may have happened, most of which would not have happened. And that to me is the number one thing I point to. Last comment from me on Tim, maybe less clear because it's a runaway unanimous vote for his Heisman in the economic development arena. I would say he is at a minimum a finalist for most valuable player in our 8 years, period, across the entirety of our interests, across all departments, front office, all 61,000 employees who find their way up working under our office over the past 8 years. It's transformational. And one example, I'll only give you one. It's a strategic innovation center, but it has huge legs into, I believe, Tammy, if she were here, by the way, she sends her love and best wishes and thanks. I think she mentioned that now 22 agencies or departments of government are involved in the infant and maternal health space. And there's tons of laws that we've signed, lots of cool things, but the bricks and mortar testament to the progress that we have made and will continue to make in infant and maternal health is the Infant and Maternal Health Center, which is being built and funded by the EDA, led by Tim. So while that's technically a strategic innovation center, it's got legs into the almost the entirety of our administration. That's one example of many that gets him to be at a minimum a finalist for our MVP. Last comment, Terry, if I may. Tim, your last day is tomorrow, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So what is Tim doing on his last day? On both knees, begging him to stay after class to help run a dinner with one of the founders of NVIDIA tomorrow night. So his last day is going to go to like 10 or 10:30. You talk about running, sprinting through the tape. That's exactly what this guy's going to do, including on his very last day. Could not be prouder to stand by his side as a colleague. Again, Terry, huge thanks for you and the board, but in particular, giving me a few minutes to rant and rave about Tim Sullivan. God bless you all, and Tim, incredible job. Thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Thank you, Governor.
Go get him, guys.
So that's going to be almost $1 billion project. So obviously there were a lot of stakeholders that were involved in this, and it's true. I don't think that the Netflix transaction comes to fruition without everyone setting their ego aside and recognizing that this project is so big for the state of New Jersey. It's bigger than anyone's individual accomplishments. We needed every single department in the state rowing in the same direction. Every level of government. Fort Moms is made up of three towns, one county. The Netflix development is on four county roads, a state highway, and it's split between two towns. We had to reorganize the municipal boundary just to make sure that the property wasn't divided diagonally and so that we were following street speed. We have volunteer entities that would be responding, EMS, fire. We have to figure that out with now the county that's doing a regional EMS. There were so many people that had to believe in it, put their egos aside, and try to figure out all the things, along with Ospreys, Northern Long-Eared Bats, TAFRA permits, DEP stepped up big, DCA stepped up big, the EDA, the AG's office, the GAU, every single entity. And again, EDA, EXCO, Tim, the staff, and my team. There's 17 members total of FAMERA. If you would oblige me, I'd like to call out their individual names. They don't always get credit. I would like to say their names to all of you. Laura Juhuschek, Sarah Guyverson, Regina McGrade, Jennifer Lepore, Joe Fallon, and Christy Dantes. And they are the FAMERA team that has worked really hard. And then I can't top what the governor just said, but Tim Sullivan, we've worked together now for 8 years. I went to him when I knew the executive director role was going to be open, and I told him that I wanted it, that it was in my bones, that I didn't want any other job but this job. And it was the job that I love my job, right? And I told him that, and I said, listen, I know there's going to be plenty of people that want this job, but this is the job I want. I feel like it was destined for me. And he believed in me, and when I tell you that he has never called me to micromanage me, he has never called to question my decisions. He believed in me. We'd identified December 5th as the closing date 8 months ago. And never once did he waver in his belief on us getting it done. And we did it, and he never faltered in believing that we would do it, and he always believed in me and our team. So thank you so much for always believing in us.
Thank you, Kathleen and Kara, for those presentations. I mean, true amazing examples of EDA success and impactful ones. Really, really great. Today is Tim's final board meeting. He's been CEO since 2018. I'm going to skip a number of prepared remarks since, you know, we need to make dinner. But one interesting factoid, since 2018, the NJEDA has created 100 new programs, delivered more than $8.5 billion in funding, and increased support for small businesses by 17-fold. And I think you all, everybody in the room knows that. I want to say personally, what a pleasure it's been to work with Tim. This is my first experience in public service. It's been a fabulous 3 years for me. I really appreciate it. And the team is fantastic, but it's really made that way working with Tim, because he's a great partner, a great leader, and not only within internally, but the way he knows New Jersey politics, which I think is critical for the success of the EGA, has just been fantastic. So on a personal level, a fantastic person, and it's really been a pleasure and honor to sit beside you. And with that, I will turn it over to you for the CEO report.
Or one last time. Thank you, Chairman. I'm going to do this in kind of two pieces, kind of just a regular business update. This is a business meeting. We have a lot of work to do with this sort of ceremonial stuff at the front, which I deeply appreciate. None of the governor was going to do that. I'm a little, you know, recovering from that. I'll be okay. I'll get through it. Continue to be busy. Obviously, sprinting to the finish, as the governor said. On a whole different array of fronts. You know, you have in the board dashboard that Mary will go through in a moment, the sort of the report card of what we've been up to since the last board meeting. Just a couple milestones. Obviously, Kara just highlighted a milestone without compare in the Netflix closing a week or so ago. Just everything Kara said, if you want something extraordinarily important and hard done, get Kara to work on it, because she's just an incredible person, one of many incredible people that I have the privilege of working with, but Kara, an incredible job on the Netflix project. And we, somewhat by design, are having a few milestones related to the film and TV journey in general. A bunch of us were together in Newark last Thursday to celebrate the groundbreaking for the Lionsgate studio in the South Ward of Newark, the former Seth Boyden houses. A bunch of us will be together tomorrow in what I expect to be parkas and hats in Bayonne to celebrate the groundbreaking for 1888 Studios and Paramount's investment in the film and television business in New Jersey. And again, just a great example of the momentum we have in film and television. With that, I'll hand it to Mary to give a little update on sort of the activities of the authority in the last month or so.
So just a few things going on. In addition to sort of the highlights from the chairman and Tim, just looking at what we did in November, you know, you've got almost $1 billion, $830-something million worth of approvals in November, half of that coming from our real estate programs and Aspire and Cafe. Our big Next New Jersey AI approval was in November as well, the CoreWeave. So a lot of really incredible work going on there. I think I would just add to sort of what life's been like in New Jersey for the last 8 years. For those who have been counting, over 250,000 new jobs created, 11% increase in the GDP. I won't say that that's because of Tim, because we want his head to fit out of the door. However, it is certainly in large part due to the hard work of EDA and the incredible team here. And I think the one word I would say, it's a new word for Tim, he doesn't use it much, it's extraordinary.
Funny. You're the funny one around here. if I could keep the floor for another couple minutes, I do have some thoughts on this being my last board meeting, which I can't believe is here. It's been 8 years, and it's been just an incredible journey. I want to start with that. I'm only going to do three thank yous by name. I want to start by thanking the governor now in absentia. I did not know he was going to be here. I would have heard to say something when he was here, but, when Governor Murphy took office almost 8 years ago, right, his mission to his message for the state, his vision for the state was to build, and it's still up on the screen, a stronger and fairer New Jersey, and by extension, a stronger and fairer economy. And, had us focused from day one on, enhancing our support for small business and dramatically increasing our investments in recapturing our leadership position, innovation and entrepreneurship, enhancing our economic competitiveness, but also doing so in a way that is inclusive and intentional about expanding the opportunity pie for everybody in New Jersey, particularly communities that have been disinvested in and left behind for generations. And, obviously that mission, you would never declare mission accomplished on any of those fronts, but I think the momentum that we have on all those fronts is incredibly positive, the strongest it's been in recent memory. Mary mentioned some of this, but 250,000 plus new jobs since Governor Murphy took office, going from worst to first in the region in private sector job creation in the Northeast. The governor will leave office barring some enormous statistical anomaly. He'll leave office with record population, a record number of businesses, record number of small businesses, a record number of startup formations on a monthly basis. And while, again, we have a lot of room to go on narrowing some of the inequalities in the economy, we've seen a nearly doubling of Black-owned businesses in New Jersey. The Hispanic business community contributes now more than $100 billion to New Jersey's GDP. And so those things have all happened, by the way, because of, not in spite of, investments by the governor, by the legislature in things like protecting the environment, protecting workers' rights, paid family leave, and fiscal responsibility, and protecting New Jerseyans' fundamental rights and freedoms. All those things have contributed to and driven that economic momentum. I'd also be remiss if I didn't give a shout out and mention to First Lady Tammy Murphy. The governor mentioned her, as he should. I think her irreplaceable energy on so many fronts across the administration is without compare. And as it relates to the work here at the EDA, whether it's women's entrepreneurship, whether it's the maternal and infant health center that the governor mentioned, whether it's the film and television industry, Tammy is one of the not just architects but builders of that industry, whether it's Netflix or Lionsgate or 1888 and Paramount. Those projects don't happen without her, period, end of sentence. So I want to give her a shout out. The third person I'll mention by name is to my left, our extraordinary chairman, Terry O'Toole, who's been just a mentor and a leader and a friend over these past 3 years, obviously standing on the shoulders of Kevin and Larry, two more names, Kevin and Larry, who held that seat before him. We've continued to take this organization to higher and higher heights. And you've been essential, an existential fact, and so much to me personally to have your friendship and mentorship over the years. During your time as chairman, the EDA, has made major, major investments in economic growth, more than $8.5 billion, as mentioned, 100 new programs, the strategic innovation centers, also really broadened, what we think about as economic development. We think about things like childcare and food security, economic security broadly. You think about clean energy. You think about arts and culture. You think about all the various programs that we're pushing forward out to really comprehensively try and build a more inclusive economy. I think we have sort of set a new standard during the Murphy years for how we think about making investments. Again, things like workforce development we'll talk about later today as well. We've done that again with a relentless focus that puts New Jersey's diversity at the center of that, not as a sort of an afterthought. And I think that legacy hopefully will carry on. Also made major investments in things like our compliance and oversight responsibilities. We can't ever forget that. The foundation of what we do is making sure that what people say they're going to do and what we're funding gets done and gets done the right way. And from day one, we've made those major investments. And so I think, you know, I want to thank you, Chairman, but also, of course, our extraordinary board. Some of you have been with me, or I've been on the board since I came in. Some of you joined 5 or 6 years ago. A couple have joined in the last year or two. But just an outstanding group of leaders from the private sector, from labor, from local and county governments on our board. Of course, my cabinet colleagues are on our board. I also want to give a couple shout-outs again. It's probably my last time to have the mic. There's no Oscar music to play me off, so I'm going to share a couple more thoughts before I go here and get back to business. I think one of the things Governor Murphy rightly gets credit for and deserves credit for is assembling a cabinet, both from the beginning and replenished throughout the 8 years, of extraordinary folks, four of whom sit on our board and are dear friends, as well as, you know, 20-plus other folks who have been incredibly important leaders throughout our state's government, making huge progress on so many fronts. Everything we do here, or nearly everything we do, is either funded by or endorsed by or created by statute by the legislature. We've had incredible support from not just legislative leadership, but up and down the state, in the legislature, in both chambers and in both parties, I'm proud to report, where we've had extraordinary – you made fun of me for saying extraordinary too much. And I'm going to do it, and every time I do it, it's going to trip you. Kathleen started on a Friday. And you guys are all – you're on my list.
We have bumper stickers and T-shirts.
Until tomorrow, I can still fuss at you. You know, we're also blessed in New Jersey to have an incredible, very good, outstanding crop of mayors and county executives and dedicated folks at the local level, the county level, the regional level who support the work we do. We have, I want to thank our partners in the private sector and the chambers and in the nonprofit world and higher ed. Some of them are here today. Thank you for being here. Who, you know, are incredible partners to us. But I want to close by thanking our staff here at the EDA, the team at the EDA, to a person, whether they've been here for 35 plus years, I think is our longest running tenured member of the authority, to folks who've joined in the last couple of weeks. You know, I've been blessed to have an excellent, a really great group of colleagues and teammates. It's been such an honor to serve with all of you. Our senior leadership team, our executive committee, to a person, is just outstanding people who are dedicated and talented and creative, who operate with integrity and excellence every single day, and no one more so than the person to my right. But so thrilled. Well, once my resignation takes effect tomorrow, our session plan or our continuity of operations plan, did I get that right? Continuity of operations plan will be triggered, and the deputy CEO will become the acting CEO, and I can't think of anyone in the world I would want vested with that responsibility more than you, Mary. Your partnership, your friendship, your leadership, as we've been basically jointly running this place for a while, is irreplaceable, and I couldn't be more excited about what the future holds for you. So thank you, Mary. Thank you all so very much. We have a lot of work to do still by the end of this meeting, so I'm gonna clam up. But thank you so much for everything these past 8 years. It's been an honor and a privilege and a special honor of my life to do this job. So thank you all so very much.
I think the most significant achievement is we've demonstrated that a Villanova and Georgetown alum can work together in harmony.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, we do have a lot to do today. So I'm going to ask us to approve the November 12th NJEDA board minutes. Can I hear a motion to approve, please? A second?
Second, Chris.
Aye.
All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed refusals or abstentions? None heard. The meeting minutes are approved. I'm now going to open the public comment portion of the meeting. Can I ask Daniel Lesser to share the NJEDA's public comment policy and process for this board meeting, please?
Absolutely. Members of the public who wish to speak during the public comment portion of the meeting will be acknowledged to speak first in person, then by Teams, then by phone. Members of the public attending via Microsoft Teams may use the raise hand feature to be placed into a queue to provide comment. Each person will be acknowledged to speak in order of hands raised. Once acknowledged, please unmute yourself to provide comment. All members of the public must remain muted following the public comment portion of the meeting. A staff member may mute you if you are unable to remain muted. Members of the public attending by phone who are interested in providing comment will be advised to press star, then one, to be registered to speak, which will place each person into a queue to provide comment. We'll now go over NJEDA's public comment policy, which is also available on the NJEDA website. Each speaker will be prompted to speak one at a time. Each speaker should announce his or her name, organization affiliation, and the topic on which remarks will be given. Each speaker will have a maximum of 3 minutes to speak and should limit comments to matters pertaining to the authority. A staff member will prompt the speaker once their time has expired. A person may only speak once during public comment period to ensure there's enough time for all those who wish to speak. And related documents, printed comments, or materials may be attached to an email. We look forward to receiving your public comment at this time.
Thank you, Danielle. I'm now going to acknowledge members of the public who wish to provide comment. I would ask everyone to keep your comments to 3 minutes or less because we have, again, a lot to do and I think a number of speakers today. So is there anyone in the room who would like to address the board?
Good morning. Good morning. I'm John Harmon, founder, president, CEO of the African American Chamber of Commerce of New Jersey, Chairman O'Toole, CEO Sullivan, board, those who are in attendance and those who are on video, what have you. I just wanted to say a few words. And given that the governor spoke, I'll just start off by saying ditto to everything the governor said, because he said a lot. But I can recall meeting Governor Murphy in 2016, and I shared with him what we had accomplished with the African American Chamber of Commerce and what I was expected to accomplish with him. And I shared some of the things we did with the prior administration. One thing he shared with me was that he would exceed everything that we had achieved with the prior administration. And then I got introduced to Tim Sullivan and other members of the team, and I'm here to report today that in fact came to fruition. And Tim, as you move on to the next phase of your life, I just want to say thank you. I want to say thank you for being a man of your word. Thank you for running the authority with integrity, with intentionality, and being very purposeful. And at times, being professional enough to say what you could do and what you could not do, and we could count on you to do those things that you did. And so I will close with this. Out of all the agencies that we worked together to make true on what the governor had declared, two of them are here today. Commissioner of Labor, I can't say enough about you and your partnership with the African American Chamber. And then with the EDA, those two organizations really enable us to get to a whole nother level and bringing to contribute to the governor's mandate to make the state stronger and fairer, and I would add more competitive. So best wishes to you and all of you, the team from the EDA who work with us and others to make this a pretty good run, and best wishes and happy holidays to everyone. I have to get to Washington.
Thank you, John.
Be well.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Anyone else in the room?
Good morning. My name is Tony Lohman. I'm the Chancellor of Rowan University, and I'm very happy to be here today for a couple of reasons. Number one, there's multiple resolutions with Rowan-related issues, and really it's all why I'm here today. So I'm going to give thanks to all the same group of people my good friend John just gave. But I want to use my time. If we're on video, I want to get the Heisman on the record for Tim, because that is spot on. I'm just going to tell a story. In 2016, I was the dean of the College of Engineering at Rowan, and I remember meeting the deans from Rutgers, NGIT, Stevens. We'd go down every year in February. We talked about how all of our technology startups are going to Philadelphia, Delaware down my way, going to New York, Lehigh Valley, up this way. That's where we're going. I'm also a founder. I founded my own med tech company in 2016. Our corporate offices are in Baltimore, Maryland, and all of our manufacturing is done in Connecticut. That was where our funding came from in the first couple of years, 2016, 2017. That's the economy. And on Friday, the College of Engineering hosted a unveiling for a med tech company coming out of our College of Engineering in the Joint Health Science Center in Camden, which we expect will be the first company to really go through the AIM Accelerator. So I think what a difference this has made for the state of New Jersey. Roll the clock back 10 years ago, we were looking, where can we go? Because it wasn't back home. And I could get into all the details and all the great stuff, but really what we're talking about today is a thriving ecosystem for technology for all of the research universities here in New Jersey. And really, it's under this leadership. Tim, Kathleen, Rom, Tim Rollander, all these people that work with us to launch this. And it's not just this Strategic Innovation Center that's helping drive Rowan. It's the Coriell Institute, where we've got the Rowan Cooper Coriell Cancer Research Center. It's the NARTP down in Atlantic City, where Rowan, Stockton, and the NARTP are doing workforce development and driving innovation research. So, Tim and team, you really have transformed this state and what we can do. So, I want to thank you for everything you've done. I am extremely confident that we are in a great space to drive this forward and really be the leader. So, thank you, Tim. Good luck. Thanks.
Great. Good morning. My name is Luis de Laos. I'm the chairman of the board of directors of the Statewide Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. And I'm here to say thank you. The NJEDA treats not only us, but the entire community and Main Street businesses very well, especially during the pandemic. The use of technology and the focus on what I call micro businesses, those that have less than 10 full-time employees, was remarkable. And that makes a difference because the use of technology allow NJEDA to provide a small amount of money, but to too many businesses through the state, often enough for keep them open. Now, one thing that we learned through this past 8 years and today, EDA is that not everything needs to be designed to us, but we can take advantage of all the programs. When the NJEDA launched the NJCIP program, we didn't know about it, but we took advantage of that. And many of the people or the businesses who took advantage of that program are Main Street businesses, family-owned businesses, those that really make a difference for the communities. Just to give you an example, in our community, we have 5 more times to save money if we start a business versus if we have a job, unless it's a team job. But the reality is that we have the ability to communicate with many people at the ADA to have conversations. Not everything is perfect, but having that ability to communicate to too many people and having that ability to pay attention to what is needed from our communities make a difference. I always say that helping NJEDA to spend money on small businesses helped me to relieve stress. And I was very grateful for everything that we see and the impact that the programs of the NJEDA did for those more than 140,000 Latino small business owners in the main streets of New Jersey, in the entire state. And that only didn't work for us. I remember meeting at the state chamber with someone from the Punjabi that was driving a nice electric car. And that was thanks to the NJC because we promote that to everybody. Thank you very much. We really appreciate it. It's not only that, we just recently came from the economic mission to Mexico. That started here 7.5 years ago. And I always tell people that this is not like a drive-through. It's not that we come here and we ask for something and we get what we are expecting. This is hard work, and this is being patient, being disciplined, and perseverance. Otherwise, we won't get where we need to go. And this is not one community against the other community. This is trying to uplift the entire New Jersey economy. Thank you very much, team. Thank you very much to all the team members of the NJEDA. I know that when we call and you look at the caller ID, you probably say, oh, again. But the reality is we never come to complain. We are trying to advance the programs that will make an impact in the communities that we serve. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else in the room?
Yes, I got one question. Is this in reference to the Jersey Feed Grant, this public comment, or wait to that?
No, now's the time.
Good morning, members of the panel. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. I'm Jeremiah Bass, owner-operator Bass Brothers Produce. We are a minority-owned fresh produce company that represents the city of Trenton. We operate inside the city of Trenton. I am here today to represent that because our application was declined. And we believe our proposal did not receive an equitable consideration in relation to the grants of the goal. What our business does is pretty micro. We provide the community with fresh produce from the wholesale markets, direct from New Jersey farmers. We are Jersey Fresh First. We buy everything Jersey from Vineland to the upper northern state part of the states. We love to buy from Jersey. There's nothing worse than seeing a farmer that ships his loaded tomatoes to the market and have it returned back to him, only because Florida, Mexico, and other tomato growers or produce growers flood the market with their product. So what we do, and we try our best to provide the community with the best, and we all know that Jersey Fresh is the best. Now, we are a minority-owned fresh produce company. You probably won't see too many African-Americans selling produce anymore. It's a long, ancient business that's long been, capitalized or commercialized through the Walmarts, through the Targets, all these places that has taken away the localness to the produce and the intimacy to the produce. A lot of people forgot about the intimacy in the kitchen. You got to remember, if mom's made dad's favorite meal, next thing you know, a baby was born. That's the intimacy of the kitchen that's lost. We got DoorDash, we got this, we got that, we got all this other stuff that takes away the intimacy of the kitchen. But what we provide is that gap, is that service, whereas though you get the freshest fruit at a wholesale price. Now, what we've done, we worked directly with Colonial Farms right downtown Trenton the last couple of weeks. It's too cold to stand out there now. But through that, we surveyed what was sold. So what was sold is a host of items that the food banks will never deliver. Cocoa, mangoes, guava, pink pineapple, mandarins, sugar canes, passion fruit. As we know, the community is evolving. It's changing. It's rapidly changing. So we also surveyed the East Trenton and the West Trenton blocks. What we found is 70% is Hispanic. Now, what the food banks will deliver is potatoes, beets, all sort of American things that they're not accustomed to. But what we provide is that niche to make sure that these people eat at an affordable price, at a daily rate, and healthy. And it's accessible because what we do, we peddle the fruit 7 days a week. So you can call us, we deliver it, no matter the amount. We're based in Trenton, we're from Trenton, and we love the city of Trenton. Trenton represents much. It got a vast history. So what we say, or what I say is, the same grants that NJF has provided these organizations, also they received the Mercer County grants also. So they got Mercer County grant and they got the state grant. So a company like me gets zero. But what we do, and if you got to remember, food bank is only open one day out the week. So a lot of people work. A lot of people have children, so they can't access that. You can't run from work and then run to the food bank. That's quite impossible. So what we are able to do is provide them with fresh fruit at wholesale prices, sort of like a Costco on wheels or just your everyday produce that we provide. And what we do is reduce food waste. So a lot of these foods that's given to these food banks, they sold at the corner stores. The people don't eat it. The people won't eat the beets. They won't eat the donated canned goods. They won't eat the other juices. So what you'll find if you drive around in this city, you'll see these food bank boxes part in front of the the local stores. So it's not as direct as us, because we want to provide so the children get the chance to eat. The children may like strawberry, or the elderly may have diabetes. So we know strawberries is the best fruit for a person with diabetes. It wouldn't be sweet potatoes or blueberries, or there'd be a host of things. But we all know that food is medicine, and that's our clear part of our daily goal, to promote that food is medicine. We got to watch what we consume in our body and what we intake. We've just asked for reconsideration of our application, more importantly, or at minimum, a clear explanation of the criteria and the scoring used in this decision. Because some say, hey, Bass Brothers don't have the experience. But Bass Brothers' mother in 1978, before I was born, was shot during a holdup with me in her stomach. So I know that the experience is here. You know, I'm a chosen child. Because if my mother didn't turn sideways, I wouldn't even be present today giving this presentation to you. So our history is here in the Trenton. This is May 4th, 1978. So experience is definitely not an issue. It's just an opportunity to continue to provide for this city what my family has done over 70 years. We already working in this city, but we was asking for more trucks and just a website. Just two simple things. And that's what make it more and more affordable, accessible, and healthy. Because what we learned that a lot of times in the inner city, they provide medicine and food based, not the American dream. We all are American. We got to continue with the American dream and work. If you want that good fruit, work for it. It's affordable, it's accessible, and it's easy. Thank you. Thank you all for giving me the opportunity to speak.
Thank you. Thank you. Anyone else in the room? All right, seeing none. Any members on Teams with their hands raised? No one? All right, any operator, anyone on the phone?
Ladies and gentlemen, for members of the public on the phone, if you wish to ask a question, please press star then one on your telephone keypad. You may withdraw your question by pressing star then two. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, you may press star then one at this time. One moment, please. At this time, we have no questions on the phone line.
All right. Thank you, operator. I will now consider the public's comments section of the meeting closed. We're going to move on to the action items for today. I'm going to very quickly give a summary, as we always do at these meetings. Between meetings, the policy committee met on December 4th, considered several items which were being presented for action today, including two new strategic innovation center investments, the Feed NJ program of approvals, an NJIEF follow-on investment, and an MOU with Rowan. The Incentives Committee met on December 2nd. Staff presented the recommendation regarding the 2025 NJ Innovation Evergreen Fund Tax Credit Auction bid approvals, which will be presented to the board today. And finally, the NJEDA Audit Committee met on December 8th for regular reporting and updates, including a presentation on the fiscal plan for 2026, which will also be presented today for action. So the first item up is Tim Rollander on two SIC matters.
Good morning. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. It's a pleasure to be with you today to present staff's recommendation for an investment of up to $12.55 million to support the creation of the NJ Accelerator for Innovation in MedTech, or NJ-AIM, and the Nurture NJ Innovation Center, or NIC, strategies. The investment will comprise of four elements. First, EDA will be entering into a 50-50 joint venture with Rowan University, contributing approximately $2.55 million to form MedNeo LLC, which will initially hire an executive director to oversee both strategies and will contract with California-based Plug and Play, manage an accelerator offering both unified general support as well as specialized access to equipment and training for med tech companies out of the Joint Health Sciences Center in Camden for the NJ AIM companies, and provide similarly tailored experience to support development of digital-only maternal and infant health companies in the MIA building once constructed in Trenton. Additionally, MedNeo will contract with Hooper University Healthcare, who stepped up as the initial corporate affiliate, provide a five-year contribution representing in-kind staff and services to support the entity. NJE will fund a $5.5 million investment vehicle to be managed by Plug and Play to make investments into eligible medtech and maternal infant health companies having principal business location in New Jersey, which will see a matching co-investment again from Rowan University Foundation. EDA has had a positive relationship with Plug and Play, a group that Stevens Institute selected for our partners on the NJ FAST initiative. Over the last year, Plug and Play has added vibrancy to the ecosystem, hosting two selection days, two demo days for their accelerator companies participating throughout the ecosystem. NJ FAST, incidentally, has made five investments over the last year, and Plug and Play is compliant on all of them. Third, to support companies at the very earliest stages of medtech and maternal infant health development, EDA will fund a $1.5 million venture studio fund managed by NLC Health Management to support 8 to 10 brand new businesses being formed in New Jersey, leveraging intellectual property from New Jersey universities and corporations. NLC is the most active early stage venture investor, life science venture investor in Europe. They will see approximately 1,500 pieces of intellectual property annually. They have, since their formation, created 100 new businesses out of 400 transactions. Additionally, the New Jersey location will serve as their U.S. landing pad for their European company. And then finally, EDA will reserve an allocation of $3 million for early phase maternal and infant health pre-venture development initiative located in Trenton to provide programmatic and technical support administered by a third party that SAP will present at a future board date. I'll conclude reiterating the request for approval of the commitment up to $12.55 million in aggregate to form NJ AIM and nurture NJ Innovation Centers as drawn out in the memo, including authorization of the CEO to execute all documents required, and a 4.5% administrative fee to the EDA plus associated authority and legal costs as allowed by HERC statutes. Thank you very much, and welcome to Ben.
Any questions for Tim?
Governor thinks the Strategic Innovation Centers are pretty good, by the way, in case anyone needs to refrain from earlier in the program.
Anyone on the phone with questions for Tim? Okay, hearing none, can I hear a motion to approve?
Move.
Thank you. Second?
Second, Cruz.
No further discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions?
Excuse me. Good morning, Chairman. This is Jewel Antoine Johnson. I will be recusing because of a potential work my business is considering related to the parties involved on these projects.
Noted, Jewel. Thank you. Any other recusals? Hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Whoever did it, didn't hear. Any opposed, refusals, assumptions, hearing none, it is approved.
Next, Tim, you're going to do the NJAI Accelerator Fund.
Yep, thank you very much. Appreciate the opportunity to present the recommendation for a Strategic Innovation Center commitment up to $10 million to create the NJAI Hub Accelerator Fund to be managed by Plug and Play, a name that we know well. Of course, the board approved in April 2025 a $15 million commitment to create the NJAI Hub alongside our partners at Microsoft, CoreWeave, and Princeton University to serve as an exchange and an institute built on three pillars as corporate R&D, innovation acceleration, and as workforce development to build pathways for careers into the AI workforce. Since launching, the AI Hub has selected California-based Plug and Play as the accelerator manager. That program will again welcome approximately 15 to 20 companies per cohort twice a year, leveraging the same formula for which Plug and Play is known well at over 100 programs around the world, providing insight and access to strategic corporate partners. The NJAI Hub Accelerator Fund will invest in participating companies associated with the NJAI Hub Accelerator over the next 5 years. Initially seeding the fund along with NJEDA will be CoreWeave and Associates, contributing $10 million, and Plug and Play representing 1% of aggregate commitments. 50% of the distributions resulting from EDA's investment in the AI Hub Fund will be contributed back to the AI Hub to further support content operations as value is created from successful investment. I'll conclude reiterating a request for approval, a commitment of up to $10 million to support the AI Hub Accelerator Fund, authorization to the CEO to execute all documents required as detailed in the memo, and a 4.5% administrative fee to the EDA plus associated authority legal costs as allowed by IRF statute. Again, thank you very much.
And again, I know I always ask these about the SICs. This is actually a fund to invest in companies coming out of the SIC.
That's correct. Specifically.
And our first investment was essentially creating the infrastructure
for
the SIC.
Right. Yep. Correct. Yep.
Any questions? Anyone on the phone, comments or questions? Okay, hearing none, can I hear a motion to approve?
Angela.
Thanks, Rob. Second?
Dragon, second.
We'll consider Elizabeth.
Any other discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay. Hearing none, the motion is approved.
Thank you.
Max on CPACE.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
This is a relatively boring one, so stick with me for just a few minutes. But my name is Max Frank. I am a senior project officer on the clean energy team, and I am here presenting a memo regarding a few programmatic revisions to the Garden State CPACE program. So, just for some background, the board approved the CPACE program in October of 2024, and the program then launched fully in July 30th of 2025. We have about 13 municipalities that are currently participating. That is a growing number. As you can imagine, it takes some time for municipalities to adopt ordinances and sign agreements. And we have three projects in for about $100 million, applications submitted with one of them approved. So, the program, just for some background here, the program enables commercial property owners to undertake certain kinds of improvements, generally tied to energy efficiency, resiliency, and generation, and repay the investment of that improvement back as a special assessment on your property tax bill or adjacent to your property tax bill, but billed in cycle and collected in cycle with property taxes. The program uses 100% private capital. It is not public dollars. And as such, we qualify capital providers. And in the process of qualifying a capital provider, which we now have four, and again, a growing number, we ask them for a tax clearance and certificate. However, we do not ask the property owner, which is the applicant, the borrower, to EDA, borrowing the private capital. We do not ask them for a tax clearance and certificate. This was an oversight when we took this to board the first time around. And as such, staff is now requesting basically the replacement, where we do not ask it for a tax clearance certificate from the capital provider when they're becoming qualified, but we do ask for the property owner, which is more aligned with effectively, you know, every other program we have within EDA. So that's one. And then two is regarding the fees that municipalities are entitled to collect from property owners, because as I mentioned, municipalities must become participating, and their responsibility as a participating municipality is to bill, collect, and then remit the CPACE financing amount from the municipality to the capital provider. And so there are, of course, administrative expenses associated with that. And currently, the program enables municipalities to charge up to $1,250 per project per year from property owners. And we have heard from countless municipalities that that should be increased. And as such, staff proposes increasing that fee amount payable from property owners to municipalities for projects under $15 million to $5,000 per project per year and up to $10,000 per project per year if the CPACE financing amount is greater than $15 million. But in any case, the fees charged to a project must reflect the reasonable and actual cost of billing, collecting, and remitting the annual amounts due, which is statutory language. The third request is simply delegation of authority to the CEO to amend municipal fees going forward, just because, you know, things change, software costs change, administrative expenses change. So just simpler to have it as delegated authority. So just to summarize all of that, number one is replacing the requirement for capital providers to be in good standing with the New Jersey Department of Treasury, with the requirement for project applicants to be in good standing with Treasury. Two is removing the municipal closing fee, which is really just clarification within the guidelines, and replacing that with a single fee that is up to $10,000, depending on the project size. And three is delegation of authority to the CEO.
And Max, are those fees in number two, are they the currently 750 and 500 above?
Correct. So it's $750. It's currently two separate fees that are not so straightforward in the guidelines. So you have 750 and then separately 500.
Right.
So we're basically consolidating them into one and increasing the max.
Right. But you're increasing the max.
Correct.
Correct. Two, which reflects, I assume, the cost.
Correct. Right. Yeah. We went out for public comment and didn't have any comments submitted by municipalities. And we did that twice and still no comment from municipalities. So while we've engaged them to opt them in, this is the feedback we've gotten.
Okay. Any questions or comments? Anyone on the phone, questions or comments? Okay. Hearing none, could we hear a motion to approve?
Dragon, motion to approve.
Thanks, Maciel. Someone on the phone, who was that?
Dragon.
Elizabeth, is that you seconding?
Yep, that's me seconding. Thank you, Elizabeth.
All right, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Hearing none, the updates are approved.
Thank you, everyone, and thank you, Tim.
All right, Sean, on MOU with the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Sean Sonneman. I'm one of the managers on the clean energy team here. Today, I'm bringing to board a request to enter into and fund a memorandum of understanding with the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey. Specifically, we're looking to utilize up to $15 million in REGI funds for the Port Authority to purchase and put into service in New Jersey new zero-emission vehicles. And while they are a bi-state agency, these vehicles would be based in and operate out of their New Jersey facilities and would be a mix of light, medium, and heavy-duty zero-emission vehicles. Specifically, we would be funding the incremental cost difference of an electric vehicle model versus a typical combustion vehicle for all the vehicles that the authority would be purchasing, with the exception of just some electric buses, which would cover the full cost of those buses. You may remember we entered into a similar MOU with NJ Transit earlier this year for new electric buses and associated infrastructure at their Camden facility, and we are looking at similar conversations with other authorities in the state to do related projects in the future. Just to give you kind of an update where we are in terms of REGI funding overall, as a reminder, this is kind of the main source of funding for majority of our clean energy work here at the EDA, and it's governed by three-year funding plan cycles. 20 to 2022, we already have fully committed all of those dollars to programs and projects, and we are tracking well with the 23 to 25 funds as well, that with this MOU should be approved, we would be committing over $333 million to programs and projects to date. With the latest auction, results just became available last week. We're about 80% target on that, with committing to funds as they become available. We are waiting for the release of the new 26 to 28 plan, which will, of course, govern auction proceeds for the next 3 years. So just to recap, it would be entering into this MOU and then funding it with up to $15 million in REGI funds. All those funds would be on a reimbursement basis to the Port Authority once they have purchased and procured the subject vehicles. Happy to answer any questions, and thank you for your time.
I think in committee, the question came up, this is different from NJZIP because NJZIP is commercial, correct?
Correct, yeah. NJZIP has a special exclusion for state entities, and so that's why we're going through this process via MOU with other government partners.
And it's the same fundamental concept.
Correct.
Any questions? Anyone on the phone, questions or comments? Hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
Robert Dragon, motion to approve.
All right, I'm going to continue a second, okay. All right, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions?
Hearing none, the motion is approved. Thanks, John. Good luck. Kathy, on New Jersey Green Workforce Training Grant Challenge Phase 2.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm Kathy Uels with the Workforce Innovation Partnerships team, and we are requesting the board's approval for the New Jersey Workforce Training Grant Challenge Phase 2. This grant challenge is a competitively scored program for applicants that can provide New Jersey residents with a particular focus on training individuals from New Jersey's overburdened communities with access to workforce development trainings, apprenticeships, and learning opportunities for green economy careers in priority occupations in the following industries: renewable energy technologies, green design and construction, environmental and green infrastructure, grid resilience, clean transportation, or energy efficiency. The priority occupations for this grant challenge were identified in the September 2025 Growing Green Jobs Report. The $4 million of funding will be provided through the addendum to the Council on the Green Economy MOU between the EDA and the DEP that was approved by the board on October 9, 2025. Minimum and maximum award amounts are set at $500,000 and $800,000, respectively. Eligible uses of grant funding include costs associated with planning, soft launch, capital costs no more than 30% of the grant amount can be used for construction and or installation of equipment, and they can also use the funding for implementation costs. There will be no more than 10% of the grant amount that may be used on indirect costs such as administration and overhead. Applicants must include at minimum one community-based organization that serves one or more New Jersey overburdened communities as part of their application. Approvals are required by the NJEDA board for all awards and discretionary declinations. We are also requesting delegated authority to the CEO to grant a timeline extension of up to 6 months as necessary to support program objectives for those that are awarded. There will be no application fee for this grant challenge. Thank you, and I can take any questions that you may have at this time.
Any questions? Anyone on the phone, questions or comments? Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
Dragon, motion to approve.
Elizabeth, second.
Antoine Johnson, second.
We'll take Jewel on that one. How's that? All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Recusing?
Potential conflict. Rising from work.
Yeah.
Work.
That's great. Okay. Noted. That recusal noted, the motion passes. Thank you. Our next on Apprenticeship Training Center's Construction Grant Program Award. Morning.
Morning, everybody. My name is Aini Adab. I'm the Project Officer for the Workforce Innovation Partnership Team. Today, the team is requesting board approval for one grant award totaling $1,256,500 for the International Union of Operating Engineers Local 825 in Dayton, New Jersey. So the board previously approved the Apprenticeship Training Center's construction grant on April 9, 2025. And the purpose of this program is to support the development of facilities for use as training centers for USDOL registered apprenticeship programs, specifically in New Jersey overburdened community. The EDA received one application for this program that met all the eligibility criteria, and they received an 82 out of 100 for their score. With this funding, the local 825 proposes to build two new buildings on their site, and this will serve as classroom training and office space. They currently accept 30 new apprentices every year, with a total of around 130 apprentices at any given time. With the expansion, they hope to train an additional 20 apprentices per year. The expansion will also provide additional space for state-of-the-art simulators, frames, earth-moving equipment, and GPS-guided systems. They will also increase capacity to offer specialized instruction in renewable energy and infrastructure projects. And lastly, they'll have more on-site space for contractor recruitment events and scenario-based training. The total budget for the project is $1,795,000. The EDA is going to be covering 70% of these costs, which is the $1,256,500. And the applicant is going to be covering the remaining 30% of costs. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Just out of curiosity, of the $9.7 million, how much has been dispersed to date, do you know?
I think it's just the
first one.
Yes.
Okay. Then we do it a moment or two, but
okay. Yeah.
Motion to approve, Angela.
Thanks, Rob. Second?
Second, Farrar.
Thank you. Those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Hearing none, the motion is approved.
Thank you.
Next, Alexander on two, I believe. Qualified investment approval and then the tax credit results.
Thank you, Chairman. My name is Alexander Packman. I'm a manager in the Venture Products Department here at the EDA, and I'm pleased to present our recommendation for the EDA's next proposed investment under the New Jersey Innovation Evergreen Fund Program. To date, we have approved 13 initial investments into 11 companies and two follow-on investments, representing over $18 million of invested capital. We have also formal partnerships in place with 28 venture capital firms collectively managing over $6.5 billion in assets. We have a robust investment pipeline, but due to a request for delegations of authority coming later in the agenda, we will only be presenting one transaction for approval today. The applicant recommended for approval is an application by the previously approved qualified venture firm Bullpen Management LLC, doing business as Bullpen Capital, for a $1.2 million follow-on investment into a bridge round of financing into Many Moons Co., doing business as The Many Company, an innovative, high-growth, New Jersey-based business. The board approved an initial qualified investment of $3 million alongside Bullpen Capital into the Menico in July 2024. This month's proposed investment would take the aggregate program capital invested into the business up to $4.2 million. The board granted delegated authority to the EDA's CEO to approve program follow-on investments in April 2022 with certain exceptions which still require board approval. These exceptions include requests for investments with non-equity structures, such as convertible notes or a simple agreement for future equity transaction, otherwise known as a SAFE transaction. Because this proposed follow-on investment is structured as a SAFE transaction, it triggers that exception, and the members will be asked to approve the investment. The company is raising a total investment round of up to $4 million from existing investors ahead of a planned larger financing round in late 2026. As is common among bridge financing rounds, the transaction is structured as a SAFE, and in this case, it will convert at a 15% discount to the company's next equity financing round price up to a post-money valuation limit of $40 million. Upon approval, staff will reserve up to an additional $180,000 for additional related management fee expenses. The recommendation offered here today has met all program eligibility requirements as determined by the Venture Products Department, in conjunction with a parallel review conducted by the Product Operations Department. Eligibility requirements and confidential transaction details are in the recommendation memorandum. Bullpen Capital is a San Francisco-based early-stage venture capital firm managing over $700 million in assets across six flagship funds. The firm's senior management team has a rich history of founding and investing in some of the industry's most prominent technology startups. And prior funds include nine unicorn investments, now valued at over $1 billion. The firm targets early-stage investments in companies operating in industries, geographies, or with founders that are overlooked by the mainstream venture capital community. The Many Company is a Ridgewood and Passaic, New Jersey-based technology platform that helps direct-to-consumer apparel brand customers turn exception case inventory, like returns, overstock, or pre-loved inventory, into revenue through circular logistics and AI-powered technology. The company is redefining post-purchase commerce for consumer brands by transforming overstock returns and fulfillment inefficiencies into profitable automated revenue streams. The platform's AI-driven infrastructure autonomously categorizes, prices, and distributes excess inventory across 40-plus marketplaces simultaneously, creating a full-stack solution that bridges logistics and revenue optimization for apparel and retail brand customers. The company has been performing well, generating $4.7 million in annually recurring revenue as of the end of the third quarter, up from $3.1 million last year. At the time of the EDA's initial investment, the company served 10 brand partners, which has since increased to over 41 brands. The Medico also recently initiated partnerships with large retailers like The Gap and Nordstrom. The company has also grown its workforce to 24 full-time employees, 19 of whom reside and work in New Jersey, representing an increase from 12 New Jersey employees at the time of the EDA's initial investment. All of that said, as a reminder, the program's investment evaluation process focuses on an evaluation of the qualified venture firm, and a review of the potential qualified business is limited to an eligibility review. The investment follows a recent $1.3 million investment made by Bullpen Capital on the same transaction terms. I'll conclude my remarks by reiterating staff's recommendation for approval, and I'll take any questions at this time.
I think when we talked about this in committee, your sense was this is one of our most successful investments in the portfolio.
Yeah, I think so. This is a really strong group of VCs that are funding this company, and the company's growing revenues very quickly.
Whoever came up with an acronym for an early stage equity investment called SAFE deserves an award.
Yes.
I think it was
just
free, safe, unsinkable.
Any comments or questions? Anyone on the phone, comments or questions? Okay, hearing none, can I hear a motion to approve?
Antoine Johnson.
Thank you, Jewel. Second?
Second, Cruz.
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the motion is approved.
Thank you, Chairman. Moving on to the next item and next slide. Thank you. I'm also glad to present our recommendations for the 2025 New Jersey Innovation Evergreen Fund Tax Credit Auction Awards. To fund program investments and expenses, the Economic Recovery Act authorizes the EDA to sell up to $300 million of corporation business tax or insurance premium tax credits to companies operating in New Jersey through periodic tax credit auctions. Program auctions offer corporations opportunities to purchase tax credits for a minimum price of 75 cents on the dollar to offset their applicable New Jersey tax liability by up to 25%. Purchasers do not just buy program discounted tax credits with dollars. They also must implement a strategic commitment to support the state's innovation ecosystem and further support the startup community by nominating a representative to serve on the fund's advisory board. Applications for the 2025 auction year opened on September 2nd and closed on October 3rd, and the results of the auction are presented today for approval. I'm pleased to share the second program tax credit auction was a success, resulting in 10 bids from household name corporations requesting $91.6 million in tax credits. $85 million of tax credits are available for purchase through this year's auction, generating an oversubscription of approximately $6.6 million. After my remarks, you'll also hear from my colleague, Tara Colton, to preview or present the results from a concurrent tax credit auction, Food Desert Relief tax credit auction, which was equally successful, and the EDA co-marketed both auctions to the marketplace concurrently, which I think speaks volume to the EDA's ability to coordinate and partner, even when seeking program funding from the same pool of large corporations. So special shout out to Tara's team, Riley Edwards and Ty Blipsy in particular, who are fantastic partners, and then also Krevin Moronova and Devin Patel from the Venture Products Department. It was a real team effort across the EDA, not just from our two departments, to coordinate together and work with one voice to generate this result. Based on the outcome of the 2025 auction, participants will be able to purchase the $85 million of tax credits, the Evergreen Fund Program tax credits, for an aggregate purchase price of approximately $69.2 million. Which will be used to fund future program investments and expenses. This represents an average purchase price of 81.4 cents on the dollar, over 6 percentage points higher than the statutory minimum requirement, 75 cents on the dollar. Each bidder also put forth a unique strategic commitment proposal to support the state's innovation economy. Summary examples include contributions to nonprofits and universities to support innovation ecosystem-focused programming in New Jersey, free shared workspace open to innovative startups, financial support for strategic innovation centers like the NJ Fast Accelerator Program and the Maternal and Infant Health Innovation Center, sorry, old name, long-term commitments of education and training, support the futures of STEM students from underserved school districts in the state, and more. When including the $4.4 million total cost of proposed strategic commitments that will support New Jersey's innovation ecosystem, the program option benefits of the state further increases to an average price of 86.6 cents on the dollar. To determine award allocations, each completed application bid was scored by a committee of authority staff members following the July 2025 board-approved methodology. Applicants' total scores are comprised of financial bid prices, or the amount paid for a dollar of tax credits, and strategic commitment scores, which are based on the total cost of strategic commitments as a proportion of the amount of tax credits requested. Given the oversubscription from this year's auction, the scores were applied to the board-approved allocation process, resulting in the prorated awards to the 10 applicants, as noted in Appendix A of the memo and as listed on the slide. The 10 successful applicants, all of which are recommended for approval to purchase program tax credits, are Ocean First Financial Corp, Verizon Communications, Inc., Metropolitan Life Insurance Company, Comcast Corporation, the Prudential Insurance Company of America, Selective Way Insurance Co., Unilever United States, Inc., CRB Group, Inc., CGI Technologies and Solutions, Inc., and Haleon U.S. Holdings, Inc. The proposed prorated allocations of the awards are illustrated in Appendix A as well. Thank you for your consideration, and I welcome any questions or comments at this time.
Chairman, you asked before about other states doing things like strategic innovation centers. I would say that there are other states that have, there are many states that have sort of venture-related efforts. I don't think there's anybody who has anything with this level of sophistication and rigor and public-private partnership as well on the raising the money side of the equation and then to deploy that as well. And this, Alexander was being modest, his team and Tara's team. Pulling off these auctions is incredibly difficult, requires an enormous amount of sort of marketing and development of these 10 folks who bid and however many bid and who won, plus all the folks who didn't bid, just requires a tremendous amount of cultivating and care and feeding, and it's really, 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 really well done.
And we discussed in the committee, the other thing is it's interesting between this and the food security auction is they have to, these bidders have to provide a strategic commitment as well.
The other one is a bit more straightforward.
Right. Mm-hmm. Any comments or questions? Anyone on the phone, comments or questions? So hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve the award as specified?
Awesome.
Thank you. Second?
Antoine Johnson, second.
Jewel. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed, abstentions, or recusals? Hearing none, the awards are approved. Okay.
She dropped
off? Yes. Okay. Tara, on food equity and economic development, a FEED pilot program, second set of approvals and declinations.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, Alexander. Just to pick up where Alexander left off, huge gratitude to the whole economic transformation team for the partnership. We do not require board action for the results of the food desert tax credit option, but just for awareness, the final results were we had $25 million of tax credits available. We received over $36 million in demand, and we ultimately are selling them to for a total of almost $23 million. Dollars that will fund future food security initiatives here at the EDA. I want to start my remarks by thanking the food security team, Ty Blitzstein, Brian Todd, Richard Godfrey, and Riley Edwards for their tireless work. I want to get to the request in a moment, but I do want to take a moment since I have podium to thank Tim. I think what you will see in the initiatives being awarded today are a testament to the creativity and the commitment and the passion of members of communities throughout New Jersey, but they're also a testament to Tim's adamant position that we fund food security efforts that will be sustainable, that will last long beyond this administration, that may not bear fruit or take root or whatever pun you would like to use for years, maybe decades. And as important, as crucial as it is to provide direct feeding services, and we are supporting a number of those initiatives, what you're also going to be hearing about are initiatives that really sustain and grow the infrastructure of New Jersey's food security system. And so I want to thank Tim for his vision, for his belief in that, and for recognizing that food security is economic development. So with that, this should be pretty fresh in your mind. I was presenting in November for the first round of approvals for the Food Equity and Economic Development New Jersey FeedNJ program. It's a $30 million program, grants between $50,000 and $500,000. You can go to the next slide, please. We had cast a wide net in terms of what folks could propose. The main criteria were around initiatives that were proposing to serve one of the primary food desert communities in New Jersey. To refresh your memory, in November, this board approved the first 50 awards under FeedNJ for a total of $20.6 million. What we are here today to request is the additional 23 awards for $9.3 million. So that would bring our total amount of awards to 73 awards under this program. Just as context, I believe this is the largest competitively scored application program that EDA has ever done. It's incredibly rigorous. It took quite a while for us to get through the applications because we received nearly 200 applications requesting $74 million total. Again, this is a $30 million program. Can you go to the next slide, please? So the request before you today, and there are details in the appendices in your board materials, are to approve the additional 23 awardees based on the scoring as required in our program, minimum score of 70 out of 100 or higher to be eligible for funding, and a minimum score on their budget of 8 out of 15 to be eligible. We're also requesting your approval to decline 37 applicants. Those applicants that are declined will have the right to appeal and certainly can follow up with the EDA to request more information. We had a number, several dozen applicants who have withdrawn their applications prior to this board meeting. So if the numbers don't add up from what we had previously talked about, that's why. We also are requesting a minor program update because of the scale of the program and our goal of having a consistent timeline. We want to ensure there are no delayed approvals, and that's spelled out in your material. I think the last piece I just wanted to emphasize, two things. One is, Tim is moving on, but this initiative and this work will continue. And so as you heard from the Food Desert Tax Credit Auction proceeds, we plan to come back to this board in the coming months with new ideas and new funding opportunities. We have $23 million that we just bringing in that we would like to help deploy to communities. So this is not the last chance that folks will have to receive funds related to food security. We will be requesting today the approval of applicants to do everything from build community grocery stores, develop home-delivered medically tailored meals, create mobile food markets, develop urban agriculture initiatives, and expand a tool to assess eligibility for SNAP and WIC benefits. The applicants will serve all 50 of the food desert communities, including all 14 of the priority communities, and among the grantees total, not just the ones today, 24 grantees will be serving Newark, 21 Camden, 18 New Brunswick, 17 Trenton, 14 Patterson, 12 Passaic, 7 each for Salem, Bridgeton, Fairfield, Lawrence. So really thrilled about the initiative here. Happy to answer any questions.
Any questions?
Can you share your work that it's the largest competitive skill program? Or,
I've said it to a bunch of people who've worked for a long time, and they're like,
I've rebutted. Do better, you're very competitive.
Largest what?
Competitive score program in the EDA's history. It's a made-up category that Tara created.
Got an A in it.
Yes. Anyone on the phone, comments, or questions?
Okay, hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve?
Antoine Johnson.
Jewel, I'll consider that a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? So hearing none, the recommendations are approved. Thank you. All right, next, authority matters. Emmanuel on business engagement with Roma. MOU.
Thank you, Chairman. Good morning, board members and staff. This month's staff is recommending approval of an MOU for Rural University to support development of the Economic Empowerment Center, which will be an incubator with a collective of Main Street-oriented community-based businesses and ideas dedicated to strengthening the everyday small businesses that anchor local economies. Staff is also seeking authorization to allocate up to $1.5 million of the $6 million fiscal year 2024 state appropriation for wealth disparity initiatives to Rowan University to fund early center development activities. In 2021, Governor Murphy signed Executive Order 262, establishing the Wealth Disparity Task Force to examine the causes of and remedies for the longstanding wealth disparities that affect Black, Latino, and Hispanic New Jerseyans. Following its findings, the task force suggested, among other recommendations, ensuring that the remedies and reforms identified in the state's disparity study for public contracting are fully implemented in practice so that minority and women-owned businesses can participate equitably in state procurement. In coordination with these findings and recommendations, the fiscal year 2024 state budget allocated funds to authority to support programs that address persistent wealth disparities by strengthening economic growth and expanding opportunities for small businesses and local economies or local communities. Given its demonstrated expertise in innovation, regional collaboration, workforce development, and small business support, staff has determined that Rowan University is well positioned to provide strategic oversight of the center to ensure center programs advance efforts to reduce wealth disparities and respond to the needs of the local businesses and Main Street entrepreneurs. The proposed Economic Empowerment Center will be the second program under the authority's wealth disparity mandate. It is intentionally designed not as a traditional innovation hub that is primarily focused on high-growth sectors like biotech, pharma, advanced research, but as a collective, as we mentioned earlier, of states of Main Street-oriented community-based initiatives and programs dedicated to strengthen the everyday small businesses that anchor local economies. This model draws explicitly from Rowan University's Center for Innovation and Entrepreneurship, which, unlike typical innovation centers, has a strong record of supporting practical, accessible business incubation, technical assistance, and entrepreneurship training for small, service-based retail and locally rooted businesses. By using Rowan Center as a foundational model, the Economic Empowerment Center will emphasize hands-on assistance, localized capacity building, and coordinated support for minority and women-owned businesses that historically have not been fully reached by traditional innovation ecosystems. The center will be operated by the strategic partner, the African American Chamber of Commerce of New Jersey, with strategic oversight by Rowan University. Staff intentionally purposed that the strategic partner to be a member-based business association with nationally recognized standards of governance and service delivery, deep local roots, and strong local relationships across the business community. This structure will allow both Rowan and the EDA to best leverage the partner's direct relationships with the local business community, its broad membership and industry networks, and its existing capacity to deliver technical assistance and small business support. This also ensures that Main Street and community-based entrepreneurs are reached more effectively with expanded access to economic opportunity and ensure that programs are implemented in a way that aligns with real on-ground business needs. Under the MOU, the authority will allocate $1.5 million from its fiscal 2024 budget to Rowan University to support the planning, coordination, and implementation of the center. Ongoing funding and capitalization for the center, beyond this initial grant for approved operating and capital expenses, will be the responsibility of the selected strategic partner. Staff reiterates the recommendation to approve the authority's MOU with Rowan University to establish the Regional Economic Empowerment Center, along with the authorization to utilize up to $1.5 million of the $6 million state appropriation in the fiscal year 2024 budget for wealth disparity. As I pause for comments and questions, I would like to take the opportunity to wish Tim very well and with your future endeavors. It's been an honor to serve under your leadership, and I hope to see you around.
Any questions or comments? Anyone on the phone, questions or comments? Hearing none, can I hear a motion to approve? Thanks, Rob. Second?
Antoine Johnson, second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Hearing none, the MOU is approved.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
John, on delegation of authority.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning.
Good morning.
Staff is requesting 5 delegations of authority for routine administrative actions or to react to fast-paced changing external conditions. During the past several years, staff has recommended and the board has approved increasing thresholds, updating and adding delegations of authority. These requests for delegation of authority are intended to improve the authority's operating efficiencies, responsiveness in program administration, and permit the board to focus more time and attention in the creation of new programs, program oversight, performance evaluations, and strategic planning. First request is for programs and products. Members are requested to grant to the CEO delegated authority to administratively approve extensions of time for pilot programs and products across the authority's portfolios. The extensions of times are to extend the overall performance term deadlines and to allow the products and programs to continue beyond the deadlines initially included. Extensions of times would be applied program-wide and not to individual agreements. To ensure that these extensions are not applied arbitrarily, the following factors shall be considered prior to exercising the proposed delegation authority. The extension can be applied uniformly across the product or program, funding source, and the board-approved parameters for product or program permit such extensions. The extension does not cause the authority to violate any state or federal laws, and the extension for time only, and does not impact or modify any of the other terms of the agreements, and the extension of time would only be for 12 months. The second request is for film and digital. Members are requested to grant to the CEO delegated authority to approve the certification of unused and unredeemed tax credits and approve carrying over said credits to the next calendar year. For the past 5 years, the board has been requested to undertake the administrative task of approving certification of unused and unredeemed credits and carrying the credits over to the next fiscal year. This task can be delegated to the staff, which will allow the board to focus on programmatic aspects of tax credit implementation. This proposed delegation shall apply to the fiscal year carryovers only. Our third request is also for film and digital. Members are asked to approve an increase in the delegation of authority for film and digital media programs. Prior delegations approved in April of 2022 allowed the CEO to approve film and digital media tax credit projects up to 10% of the yearly cap for each allocation, excuse me, meaning $10 million for legacy film, $15 million for studio partnership, and $3 million for digital media projects. Members are asked to increase the delegation threshold by 20%, meaning $12 million for legacy, $18 million for studio partnership, and $3.6 million for media projects. The increase in delegation of authority is necessary as the EDA observes rising budgets in the film industry. Our fourth request is for the New Jersey Innovation Evergreen Fund. Members are asked to grant delegation of authority to the CEO for investment transactions up to $1.5 million. To date, members have approved 13 initial qualified investments in 11 qualified businesses since October of 2023. Approving this delegation of authority threshold up to $1.5 million will approve the authority's ability to participate in competitive, fast-moving financial rounds. Under the proposed $1.5 million threshold, 9 of the initial 13 qualified investments previously brought to this board would have been approved under this delegation of authority. For the fifth and final, I will hand it off to my colleague, Elizabeth Chinger.
Thank you, John. Good afternoon, board members. The final of the delegation request is related to the federal SSBCI program. You may recall that New Jersey received an overall allocation of over $255 million from U.S. Treasury through the Federal State Small Business Credit Initiative, of which we have received the first tranche of over $79 million in March 2023. As outlined in the board memo, EDA has established 6 programs with specific allocated funding for each of these programs. Members are now asked to grant the CEO with the delegated authority to reallocate up to 10% of the total SSBCA funds, which is up to $25 million, among these 6 approved programs, which is permitted by U.S. Treasury's SSBCI guidelines. The purpose of the proposed reallocation is aimed at optimizing fund distribution and ensuring effective fund usage to meet program interests and demands. Staff anticipate that this reallocation would also place New Jersey in a better position to meet the requirements for future funding distributions, specifically the upcoming timing with the March 15, 2026 deadline for the second tranche. U.S. Treasury considers reallocation of funds up to 10% of the total award as an administrative change, which does not require a formal amendment to the SSBCI application or the allocation agreement with U.S. Treasury. The delegated request before you also includes granting the CEO with various administrative actions, including submitting these reallocation changes to U.S. Treasury as required by the guidelines, accepting modifications to agreements related to SSBCI funds, as well as implementing necessary administrative actions for the program's reallocation. Thank you.
Okay, any questions?
No questions. Real quick, on the first one, how first for pilot programs only, and how do we define pilot programs? Give me an example.
It would be for across the entire portfolio of any pilot programs or any pilot products. So okay.
If that's statutory directed to us.
Gotcha. Yeah, we're not
oversimplifying the plus.
Yeah, this way we can ensure that it's applied uniformly.
And that's a program that the EDA constructs?
Even if it's a budget item. So, yes, it's created without a statutory underpinning.
Yeah, if it has a statutory, it just gets very complicated on whether we can, if there are different program requirements and things like that. So we limit it. It's just the pilot program to simplify it.
Well, that doesn't necessarily mean the first time doing something could be a bit of a term of art.
Gotcha. Okay. Any further questions? Anyone on the phone questions? But hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve the various delegations of authority as outlined?
Dragon, motion.
Elizabeth, second.
Antoine Johnson, second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Okay, hearing none, the delegations are approved.
It's like 28 hours to use it. Very exciting.
Next, Morris, on the 2026 fiscal plan.
Thank you, Chairman. Please present the NJEDA's fiscal plan in 2026, the details of which are in your binders. The plan is a result of collaborative effort between the fiscal office and the division chiefs and their staffs across the authority. It aligns with our 5-year projection model and our strategic plan that we had prepared last year. plan for 26 also includes our projections for revenues, expenses from our core operations, as well as our projections for new projects and our forecasts for state and federal appropriations coming in, going out, as well as, very importantly, interest income. We are projecting net earnings on an internal reporting basis, about $1.1 million on revenues of about $83.2 million. The Audit Committee has reviewed and discussed this plan at its December 8th meeting and has recommended it for presentation to the full board for approval today. And as we have done in prior years, the Accounting and Finance Office will keep the board apprised of the course of the year on the progress relative to the plan. So, thank you.
Any questions for Morris? Anyone on the phone, questions for Morris?
And we had an extensive discussion of this at the Audit Committee.
Hearing none, can we hear a motion to approve adoption of the fiscal plan for 2026?
Thank you. Second.
Antoine Johnson, second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions?
Okay, hearing none, the plan is adopted. Thank you.
Jewel, are you going to give a real estate committee update?
I am, but if you would allow me just the opportunity to want to apologize for not being there, certainly on Tim's last day, I had every intention on being there. I just wanted to share a few words. When I joined the board, I was new to this type of public service in New Jersey. And Tim, I just wanted to thank you so much for welcoming me and providing me the space to ask questions and to learn more about not only what the authority does, but why. And your leadership and generosity has certainly been transformative for me, and I've learned a great deal, and I really appreciated your guidance and your leadership. So thank you, and hats off to your next tenure.
Thank you, Joy. I really appreciate that. That means a lot to me. Thank you.
So moving into our business at hand, the NJEDA Real Estate Committee met on December 5th to review and consider three actions that were preceding the board for action this month, including the project development budget for phase two of the Liberty State Park Revitalization Program, the release of the deed restriction pertaining to the New Jersey City Medical Center, and the purchase of portions of this former riverfront state prison site in the city of Camden. I will be recusing on the action pertaining to the riverfront property in Camden, due to potential work my business is considering related to the parties. And with that, the staff will provide presentation on these items as part of today's agenda. Thank you.
Thank you, Jewel. The first item is Steve on project development budget for Liberty State Park revitalization.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, Board. For those who may not know me, my name is Steve Corcoran, and I'm a project manager with the Real Estate Development Team. Today I'm presenting on phase two of the Liberty State Park revitalization program. As you're all aware, at the September board meeting, members approved the authority entering into a construction management agreement with Aegon Tishman and establishing a not-to-exceed pre-construction budget for the project. Since that time, our construction manager has been proceeding with pre-construction efforts, ramping up staff, conducting business outreach with our workforce development, as well as preparing bid packages. In addition, our project partner, NJDEP, and their design team have performed design progression and updates to their cost estimates, which have informed the budget presented herein. Given this, we are requesting members approve two items for this project, establishing a not-to-exceed project budget in the amount of $54,205,396, as well as delegated authority to the Chief Executive Officer to approve contract changes above the not-to-exceed budget in the aggregate or up to an amount of $1 million, as well as to accept changes resulting in a credit or no additional cost to the contract with no maximum amount. The project budget for phase two is shown on this slide, and as you will see, our intention when establishing the budget was to ensure that our sources matched our uses. The fund sources for this project are comprised of federal and state monies that total to approximately $54.2 million. Our uses are derived from NJDEP's current engineer's estimate. This includes approximately $47.4 million to cover all pre-construction and construction activities, which also includes a 25% construction contingency. A 4% administrative fee is to be collected by the authority, which is 4% of the construction costs and the contingency,
The amount shown on the table is just a projected amount. Lastly, we're holding approximately $4.9 million in reserve as owner contingency. Reserving this amount will provide assurance if economic conditions or bidding climate changes during development. Some key notes regarding the budget are sent to the right of the table for reference. Next slide, please. On this slide, we will cover the second request regarding delegated authority. A delegated authority of $1 million to the CEO would be required for the approval of contract changes going construction. A singular contract change on the cumulative number of changes may not exceed $1 million. Changes exceeding this delegated authority will require board approval. This value is consistent with past real estate development requests for projects of similar size and scope. Exercising this authority is conditional on the availability of the funds within the approved project budget. The CEO will also have the authority to accept contract changes resulting in a credit or no additional cost to the contract with no maximum amounts, as I previously stated. Approval of these requests at this time will allow the authority to issue a construction notice to proceed for critical pieces of the program, which is needed to meet the development schedule and expend funding sources prior to the respective deadlines, as shown in the previous slides. We would also like the members to note that we added an additional request of an expedited veto period for this request, as the regular veto period duration increases unnecessary risk to the project. Happy to take any questions the board may have at this time.
So, Steve, if I remember when we talked about this in September, we're acting essentially as the construction manager here, right?
We have a contract with the construction manager, and we are executing the project for NJDEP.
I guess my biggest question is, do we have any financial exposure?
DEP has all financial monies for this project, secured and allocated for the project.
Anyone on the phone or in the room, comments or questions?
Yeah, the note here is we are an implementer of other people's vision for what to do.
Mm-hmm.
There's been an enormous amount of deciding and discussing about the future of Liberty State Park. We are an implementer.
And we are very much looking forward to the project.
Okay, no further comments or questions. Can I hear a motion to approve?
Dragon, motion to approve.
Elizabeth, I'm going to take that as a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any recusals, abstentions, or opposition? And hearing none, the budget is approved and the delegated authority. Next one, on releasing deed restrictions on Jersey City Medical Center.
Good afternoon, everyone. Staff requests that the members approve the release of a 2004 deed restriction put on property that the authority acquired to support the development of Jersey City Medical Center, which was a 300-bed acute care facility that Jersey City developed. In 1992, Jersey City Medical Center and the authority entered into an MOU for NJDA to acquire and mediate certain properties for the development of the acute care hospital. Subsequently, in 1994, three parties executed a tri-party agreement which governed the acquisition, delivery, and development of the property. The agreement required that the authority de-restrict the property for hospital use only, which it did when it conveyed the property to Jersey City Medical Center. The deed restriction put in place benefited Jersey only for the individual requester in the tri-party agreement. Therefore, the authority restriction without Jersey City and Jersey City benefited approval. In 2000, the authority delivered a 15-acre clear site for the acute care hospital using its condemnation power. The authority acquired nearly half of the property from one property owner, Stephen Finan. Through negotiations and settlement, the authority expended $2.445 million to acquire the hospital, which was above the amount that Jersey City was supposed to fund for the acquisition of the property to support the hospital. In 2001, the three parties also executed an amendatory agreement, which, among other things, made a representation that Jersey City, if it could, had the ability to pay and could pay, would seek approval from its funders to make payment to reimburse the facility. Also in 2001, because of Jersey City Medical Center's financial condition, EDA staff recommended and the members approved recording those funds put up to acquire the Highland property, $2.445 million, as a program loss resulting from legal settlement rather than as a loan to Jersey City Medical Center. Releasing the use of the covenant requires Jersey City consent in September 2025. Jersey City City Council approved an ordinance authorizing the release of the use restriction on the property. The portion of the property developed represents approximately 22% of the total land purchased by the authority and conveyed to Jersey City Medical for the hospital. In exchange for the use, the balance of the property contains the use restriction. Jersey City Medical Center agreed to pay about 22% of the $2.44 million, or approximately $550,000, for the relief of the covenant. This also offer represents reasonable repayment for the portion of the property that will no longer be used as a hospital, while the remainder shall continue to fulfill the public purpose underpinning the original tri-party. Proposed development on the site is aligned with the public objective of redevelopment plans to encourage redevelopment with a mixture of building types, uses, high-quality building design, and intensity development that rely on self-sufficient and vibrant new community serving as a model for a healthy urban. The revenue derived from development will support the medical facility and show its and allow it to continue to serve its community. Staff requests the members authorize execution of the three documents outlining the board members that will effectuate the release of the use restriction. Any questions?
So do we actually own this parcel?
We acquired it all as part of this. We never owned it to begin with. We were brought in essentially to use our condemnation powers to acquire the site and turn it over to Jersey City Medical Center.
Doesn't need restriction. Our property interest is just the need restriction. You were being
right.
Asked to consider partially.
And they're going to use the 22% to build housing?
Sounds like the portion of property that they're seeking to the lease restriction is going to include a mixed-use development, including housing. That's
correct. And they were paid to 22% of the original, whatever, $2.4 million.
That's correct.
The hospital covenant remains on the rest. It retains its healthcare purpose.
That's correct.
Any comments or questions? Anyone on the phone, comments or questions? By hearing none, could I hear a motion to approve? Thank you. Second?
Dragon, second.
Elizabeth. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions? Hearing none, the motion is approved. Final voting item, I believe, is the purchase of portions of the former Riverfront State Prison in Camden.
Yes. Good morning, members, staff, and the public. This presentation is in relation to the RFPOI that has been advertised on the EDA's website, seeking proposals to develop parts of the former Weeks Marine site and the former Riverfront State Prison site in Camden. To give a little bit of a background, between 2009 and 2010, the EDA, on behalf of DPMC, oversaw the demolition of the former Riverfront State Prison site in Camden. In May 2013, the members approved an MOU with DPMC formalizing EDA's role in marketing and disposing of the property. Later that year, the property was declared surplus to the needs of the state and designated NJEDA as the responsible authority for its disposition. In 2016 and again in 2019, EDA issued a request for qualification to attract private developers to purchase and redevelop the property. Unfortunately, no qualifying submittals were received. Most recently, in March 2025, the legislature enacted Public Law 2025, Chapter 30, which requires Treasury to convey an approximately 8.75-acre portion of the site to the EDA for the lesser of $5 million or the appraised value, whichever is less. The March 2025 appraisal set that value at $1,035,000, and DPMC would transfer two parcels to the EDA at that amount. At the same time, DPMC will convey the remainder of the former prison site, about 15 acres, to the city of Camden, and the city will deed two adjacent city-owned lots to the EDA for $1. Together, these four parcels create a single contiguous site that is well-positioned for the EDA to move forward with coordinated planning and future redevelopment. And that brings me to today. I today request the approvals consistent with Public Law 2025, Chapter 30, the purchase price of $1,035,000 for two state-owned development parcels from DPMC, the execution of an interdepartmental transfer agreement with DPMC to convey these two parcels, and an execution of another interdepartmental transfer agreement with the city to convey the two city-owned parcels to NJEDA. This acquisition would consolidate approximately 9.35 acres of contiguous land under NJEDA ownership to facilitate coordinated planning and redevelopment. The assemblage includes portions of the former Riverfront State Prison site and adjacent city-owned parcels, maximizing the city's the site's redevelopment potential and market appeal. And this also supports the long-term revitalization of Camden's waterfront and aligns with state and city redevelopment priorities. The purchase would be funded through the EDA's retained earnings. And if we go to the next page, so this is a visual of the site. The parent lot, block 79, lot 13, has been subdivided into four parcels, A, B, C, and a right-of-way. Under this proposed transactions, parcels B and C from DPMC would be deeded to the NJEDA, whereas parcels A and the proposed right-of-way would be deeded to the city of Camden. EDA would also get two adjacent parcels from the city, coded red on the corner, and together this would create the redevelopment parcel. And that's it for me, and I'll take any questions if there are any. Thank you.
So Camden gets parcel A.
Parcel A and that proposed right-of-way going next to parcel C.
And is that actually a, is the right-of-way a road or?
The right-of-way
partially developed.
Probably will be.
Probably will be, okay. Yeah.
And parcel A is, like a better word, open space, playground, park.
Right.
Area right now. And extended papers. Although that's it.
And so then we will, once we own this, we can sell it to a developer, develop it however we see. Fine.
Yeah, that's the concept behind the RFU that's on the street right now. It includes not only this portion, but also sort of further north. If you make like kind of U along the riverfront, so we're partnering with Camden to see if we could attract a wholesale redevelopment of that area.
Okay. Any questions or comments? Anyone on the phone? Questions or comments? Hearing none, can I hear a motion to approve?
Dragon motion.
Elizabeth, second. And the vote. Thank you, Rob. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, recusals, or abstentions?
Just noting my recusal on this, Chairman.
Noted. Jewel is recusing on this for reasons stated before. Noting that, the motion passes. We have one special item we're going to address now while our voting matters are done. We have a very important item, which is recognizing Manira on her last for last board.
Excuse me, this is the operator. Please stand by. Again, this is the operator. Please continue to stand by.
Arch, you know, through the state of New Jersey. So thank you for your kind words.
Thank you. There was one other item on the agenda, which was the executive session. We've determined there's no need to have executive session at this board meeting. Tim, board memoranda.
My last chance, but I'd read them all. Am I being preempted already?
Yeah.
You do have a number of delegated authority members asked. That is not working out. Perfect. People do what they say they're going to do, and that's our programs are run right away with integrity and class.
Great, thanks, Jim. If there are no additional comments, I'd like to thank everybody for the participation today, especially people making it in under difficult conditions, driving, and thank you very much for that. I also want to wish everybody a happy and safe holiday. We won't see people again until the new year, so happy new year to everybody. And with that, Jim, can I get our motion to adjourn?
Okay.
Second?
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
No.
Aye.
Rob, you can say, and Tim will read. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you. That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participation and for using Verizon Conferencing Service. You may now disconnect.